Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of October 20th, 2017. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Doing well. How are you doing?
Very well, very well. We're also joined by our frequent guest, Ms. Mariah Tinger. How are you doing?
I'm doing well.
Good, 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 good. I should stop referring to you guys as frequent guests and say, my co-hosts,
just bite the bullet here.
But I mean, I'm sort of not trained to say prolific. Anyone listening to the show should know that Mariah and DR are here very frequently, and we are very happy to have them here. Anyway, some interesting news popped up on the wires this week. And in context, if we rewind a couple of years, here in Massachusetts, and in an ongoing sense across the country, there have been disputes about the construction of new natural gas pipelines. And of course, here in New England, there's a dispute about making natural gas pipeline connections to the Marcellus Shale, which is out in western Pennsylvania, probably, I don't know, 200 or 300 miles away, routing natural gas up through New England, quite honestly, up towards Canada, for export. These various pipelines had been vociferously opposed by local groups, both on local issue reasons and for climate reasons, right? People don't want these pipelines to be built. The biggest argument being that the pipeline is unnecessary infrastructure that we'll have with us for many years. Turns out that the main argument that the pipeline builders, right? These companies that are energy companies, they actually get a fairly good return on simply building capital infrastructure like pipelines. One of their main arguments was that New England needed extra pipeline capacity to take care of the peak demand on especially cold days in the wintertime. Right? And that was basically the justification, the rationale for why we needed to spend $3 billion, and not only spend $3 billion, but have the ratepayers pay monthly to the tune of $3 billion over the course of years to pay for this pipeline. And that was important because we were just starved for gas on cold winter days. So, DR, let me look you squarely in the eye and ask you to tell me what was the news that came up this week?
Well, the news is that Massachusetts Attorney General Maura Healey and also the Connecticut Public Utilities Regulatory Authority are investigating allegations that Eversource essentially engaged in price gouging. This is based on a report by the Environmental Defense Fund that, according to the Boston Globe, noted that, quote, Eversource and Avangrid routinely reserved big deliveries of natural gas on the Algonquin pipeline system for frigid days, but then sharply reduced those orders too late in the day for others to use that capacity, unquote, which artificially drove up wholesale prices for natural gas and in turn increased the cost of electricity generated by gas-fired power plants. In addition, Senator Richard Blumenthal of Connecticut has asked the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission to also launch an investigation into Eversource and Avangrid, although I wouldn't be holding my breath for FERC to do anything in that respect. But it's interesting to see, you know, whether or not the pressure from both Healey and the Connecticut Public Utilities Regulatory Authority can lead to accountability if in fact it can be proven that Eversource and Avangrid engaged in this sort of chicanery.
So none of us are energy experts in our pipeline. Stuff is pretty arcane, but I think what they're saying is that on the cold days, basically these companies, Eversource and Avangrid or something, basically turned off the spigot of the natural gas supply, and that then because the supply was lower, they were doing it at the behest of the electrical utilities to drive up prices.
In essence, that's the allegation that they're basically, you know, trying to sock it to people. It's very similar to, you know, when we have an extreme weather event, all of a sudden, bottled water prices prices are artificially shoot up for no real reason. So
except in this case, the people who have the bottled water are not putting it on the shelves, right? It's all in the back room, and they're trying to charge top dollar for the few quarts that are out on the shelves. So, I mean, that's a crazy analogy, but that's basically it, right?
Exactly. And it goes to the importance of having, an attorney general and regulatory agencies that are committed to ratepayers and committed to the public, as opposed to being on the side of people who are potentially playing games with people's wallets.
Yeah. I mean, to clarify, so there's two problems with what they've been doing. The first problem is that it's driving up prices for consumers, right? And then the second problem is that it's artificially inflating. They're trying to analyze, New England's trying to analyze how much pipeline we need, right? So it's artificially inflating how much pipeline we need. Mm-hmm. So that it seems like we need more because, it's tied up and there's not enough pipeline. And yet we don't actually. I think I read that it ties up about 7% of the pipeline system compared to an average of 3.5%.
I guess I'm just confused by the technique of it. I mean, are they saying that they have some section of the pipeline they've shut off so that there's millions of pounds of natural gas locked away in a pipeline they need to open? They've closed the valve and it's just there sitting pressurized until they reopen the valves? Or are they not accepting it into the? I mean, I guess it doesn't really matter how they're gaming how they're technically doing it. But they're saying is that they are keeping certain amounts of gas off the market at critical times.
I mean, it says that both Eversource and Avangrid routinely reserve big deliveries of natural gas on the pipeline system for frigid days and then sharply reduce those orders too late in the day. So. It seems like they were saying they wouldn't sell it.
They had it. They wouldn't sell it because they were reserving it against some eventuality.
And then all of a sudden they would cancel it last minute. And then it was too late for anyone else to get it.
Wow. Oh, I got it. Right. Basically playing out the clock. So by the time somebody else could buy it, it was too late in the day. Wow. So, I mean, I guess. So tell me, what's the meaning of this? Right. What should we take from this? Should we say that Eversource is never to be trusted again? Is that a fair thing? Or do we say that the arguments in favor of building new pipelines have just been destroyed?
Well, so Eversource, of course, they're saying their defense is that they, they're concerned for their consumer. They want to make sure that nobody's left in the winter with no gas. So they're just being really conservative in their estimates. And then, oops, it turns out they don't need that much. So, they're trying to say, look, we're just trying to protect our consumers from freezing in the winter.
We're being good stewards of the supply that we're trying to sell.
Yes. And, as DR mentioned, thank goodness we have Healy, who is watching them like a hawk. She's already, going after them, right, for their rate hikes.
Right.
And so she's got her eyes on them for this as well. And she's looking out for her constituents' interests, thank goodness. And I hope that she'll figure out what's going on here.
It just seems to me that, we've touched on this before, but this whole idea that there are these energy utilities is such a business model dinosaur that dates back to the day when you really did need a natural utility because you were stringing wires and the capital investment in building these huge power plants or whatnot was huge. And, of course, that date was 1910, right? So here we are 100 years later, and we still have this model where politically we're dominated by it when there are so many other new options that weren't even contemplated back when these utilities were formed, and the utilities are fighting it tooth and nail. I guess my conclusion is that Eversource is not to be trusted. I mean, they can say whatever they want about protecting the consumers. I don't buy it.
Interesting their name, Eversource, because apparently that's what they view consumers as, an Eversource for money. And also, have you noticed, have you ever heard of anyone trying to buy a wind capacity or solar capacity? Not terribly possible.
Not much. Yeah, what do they say, a wind spill is a windy day or something, or a sun spill
is a solar spill is, right.
Well, yes, good on Attorney General Healey. We think it's a great thing that she's doing. People should be looking kindly on her. So there you go. There is the sort of state of play of things right here at home in Massachusetts. Interesting kind of corporate skullduggery, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. And I have to say, I agree with you about the distributed generation. I think that's what you were talking about, right? Where, mm-hmm. you know, it's we've got all this centralized generation right now, and it's very old fashioned. And it seems to make so much more sense to have something that, you know, is particular to you, your community, and, you know, sort of like what you were talking about in the podcast, I think last week, about Puerto Rico and how they're rebuilding with all this distributed generation.
Yeah.
Or they could rebuild with distributed generation instead of the centralized, and how it will help them to be more stable when a hurricane hits.
And there's certainly a role for regulation for the government to be involved, because the sort of the grid, in quotation marks, right, this thing that nobody really understands, or at least none of us really understand, but this way that the power is distributed is really important, right? I mean, that needs to be managed. But the idea that there are a few enormous players who control the electrical supply, right, the utility, is sort of like Ma Bell in 1982, right? I mean, that is mm-hmm. dominating thing. It didn't need to be there anymore because the technology that had outstripped it, right? Mm-hmm. Now we have the technology of all this energy that can be formulated, can be generated in many different places, and it just doesn't fit in the business model, and the dinosaur is fighting to the last breath, the dinosaur being Eversource. Yeah. Well, I guess the other, speaking of fighting to the last breath, I mean, there are questions about the future of Boston, certainly from a climate perspective, from all kinds of perspectives. Recently, in the last couple of years, there was a sort of a 10 or 20 year plan, a vision for the city of Boston over the future. We've talked about it on this show, you know, whether or not we should be, you know, say, where is the Southport business district going to go? We have GE coming in, and they're going to have many thousands of jobs sitting right on the water when the Hurricane Sandy 2 arrives in Boston at the wrong time, right? That kind of thing. It turns out this week is a big milestone, because there's this company. I don't know if you've heard of them. It's a little tiny company called Amazon, right, which has decided they're going to build a second headquarters. Now, I don't know how you can have two headquarters. I mean, that's like saying, you know, two heads. I mean, I can just imagine the culture wars in Amazon someday between the two headquarters. But HQ2 is going to be put in some city in the United States. And, of course, the city of Boston is competing to be the, what shall we say, to get the rose, sort of on the bachelorette, right, kind of thing, that Boston will be so wonderful that Amazon will choose it to build this new headquarters, which I think is going to be comparable to GE, right? It's like thousands and thousands of people coming in, and this huge economic boon. But I guess I just wanted to get your guys' reactions, but sort of a question from a climate hawk's perspective: where do you go with something like the arrival of a behemoth like Amazon in your town? I mean, what do you call on them to do? How do you see the city developing in response? And is that consistent with a sustainable, robust, durable green future? Mariah, I will look at you. Go.
Well, I mean, so it sounds like Amazon wants to come in and be 100% renewable, right? So if they do come in, and their goal is to show up as a renewable energy business, that certainly becomes a model for other businesses in the city, right? And that's a good thing. And I don't think that means that there's not going to be any, you know, increased carbon dioxide emissions associated with their presence here. Mm-hmm. But certainly just, as a model for others.
Mariah, let me just interrupt. When you say they're going to be 100% renewable, that means that there are, do you know, I mean, you may not know, but they say their corporate operations will all be covered by green energy requisitions, right? I mean, all of their energy will be technically green. Is that, do you think that's what they're saying?
Yeah, well, you know, I don't know the extent of it. DR may know better. Because certainly there's scope three emissions, right, with all the vehicles that are going out and about, and that I don't know if they include that or not. DR, do you know more about?
There was a report earlier this year from CNBC discussing Amazon trying to maximize the use of solar, and they, according to CNBC, they wanted to quote install large-scale solar systems on the rooftops of over 15 fulfillment and sortation centers across the U.S. this year. They plan to deploy solar systems at 50 of its facilities globally by 2020. So obviously, you know, Amazon talks a pretty good clean energy game, and you know, in theory, if they do come to Boston or wherever they go to, they will have the opportunity to sort of put their money where their mouths are in terms of, you know, demonstrating as a proof of concept that you can have this, you know, lucrative company be built stricter around clean energy and sort of put, you know, other companies that are still dependent upon dirty energy to shame.
I got you. I guess Mariah just taught me a new vocabulary word. I was struggling for a way to say it, but the scope three. By scope three, you mean all of these sort of attendant things. So your Amazon headquarters has a solar panel on the roof and a wind turbine, and it's wonderful and beautiful, and it's all green. But everyone driving there, the congestion in the outside street, all that kind of stuff, the new people that move to Boston and buy their, you know, crummy heavy oil furnaces, right? That's all we have around here. All that stuff is part of this, what I think you're saying is scope three, which is this sort of third ring of carbon emissions associated with a new installation, more or less, right, Mariah?
Yeah. So it's the indirect emissions. So it's sort of the, you know, all of the things that don't come from Amazon, I guess, necessarily, but are the supply chain of Amazon.
Right. Well, yeah. Well, yes. But I mean, that seems to me that comes back to, you know, what is Boston going to insist on? If you put GE in the south end, and I thought I heard Marty Walt saying today they were someplace in East Boston, not the racetrack, not Suffolk Downs, but somewhere over there. I mean, you have to have a transit system to deliver people to it, right? There's thousands of people going to come and go, and is Boston going to take that on and, you know, find solutions to this third scope thing? I mean, I say my point would be that's something to watch, right? My understanding is the actual bid from Boston will be released later this week after it's been sent to Amazon, right?
But I mean, I think I've heard something to that effect, and it'll be interesting to see, you know, the role that activism does play here in demanding, you know, carbon footprint accountability from Amazon. If it does come to Massachusetts, you know, what are their commitments going to be in terms of investing in clean energy and making sure their facilities are as clean as possible? And in terms of having, you know, Amazon delivery, you know, people, you know, all the Amazon trucks running around, how about requiring that those be, you know, clean energy cars to reduce, you know, the scope three emissions, for example?
All those delivery drones have to be battery powered, right?
Why not? Why not?
Well, I mean, and, you know, with Baker, it supposedly has these aggressive targets to reduce greenhouse gas emissions in Massachusetts and to meet our goals. And I know one of the biggest areas that Massachusetts needs to work on is transportation. And certainly, you know, if Amazon comes here, I'd hope that would be part of the negotiations, as you mentioned, TR.
Yeah. And I guess in sort of agreeing with both of what you're saying, is like there's one side that Boston makes a demand on Amazon to be green and do the right thing, but at the same time, Boston needs to build a city around the outside of that that is also sustainable and is simpatico with what you demand from Amazon. I mean, we've talked in the last couple of weeks about I guess the common theme there here would be visions of the future, right? We've talked about rebuilding Puerto Rico with no one should forget that Puerto Rico is still being damaged by our federal government, and that the response in Puerto Rico is still abysmally bad, right? Just not to go off on a rant about that. But I mean, in the hopes of building a sustainable Puerto Rico is kind of mirrored by the idea of building a sustainable Boston. And it's part of our conversation just generally should be, you know, we have to build the future. If we don't talk about what the future is going to look like, it's going to look like whatever whatever it turns out to be. Whereas if we think about it, anyway, that's, I'll get off my out of the pulpit, because I'm sure we all agree on that. Anyway, let me say we need to get going, since we're already. But I just don't want anyone to forget that this past week marked the furthest east in the Atlantic of any recorded hurricane, which struck the Emerald Isle, the place of my great 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 grandmother's birth. Right? I mean, there was Hurricane Ophelia. This unbelievably weird thing, when, you know, straight up from the Azores and went after Ireland. I mean, it's just bizarre, and I won't draw the connection, because I'm sure everyone already has it in their head, right? Why that might have happened. Okay, kids. Go ahead.
Just a quick plug there, for anyone who's in the North Shore area. There is a Clean Energy Forum, and by 350 Mass and Citizens Climate Lobby. It's at Beverly High School.
Oh, really?
And it's on Saturday, this coming Saturday, from 9 a.m. to 12:30 p.m.
Oh, cool. Good, good, good.
Yeah.
We'll put the link in the famous blog. Well, okay, we got to stop there. Let me remind our listeners that we'll put in a links to most of what we discussed about here at the blog, although I haven't heard much discussion about the climate impact of the Amazon, so it might be a little bit thin there. We'll put a link to this podcast on the Facebook page at /MassClimateAction. Please check it out. Please join our Facebook page. You'll learn lots of interesting stuff. Of course, you can listen to the show directly on your smartphone using Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Overcast, Podbean, SoundCloud, and a lot of other directories. And, of course, you can find us on iTunes. If you go to iTunes or any of these places, please give us a review. Click. I know it's hard. I mean, everyone wants to remain anonymous. But if you click on us, it pushes us up in the search ratings. So we will close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because especially in Boston, and because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the reckless policies of the new administration not be accepted as normal, and the United States put a long-term and equitable price on carbon. So thanks for being here, DR.
Thanks.
Mariah, thank you so much for being here.
Always a pleasure.
Thanks to everyone for listening. We really appreciate you tuning in. We'll talk to you again real soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us, and until next time, be green.
Very cool.